HRheadquarters.ie, the podcast.
You're very welcome back to HR HQ. I'm Andrea Hayes, and today we're diving into a question every leader has seen play out at some point. Two employees, same role, same environment, same expectations. Why does one thrive while the other sometimes barely survives? To explore this question, I'm joined by Steph. Her entire business model, study and areas of research has been shaped by this question. She examines it and creates solutions through a number of lenses, the system lens, the leader lens, the team lens and the individual. Steph has been working and leading in HR since 2013. And in 2019, she launched Steph B. And it has transformed into Steph B Global Collective in 2024. Steph, it's great to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, this is a question. I mean, we all know it. We've seen it in the office. Mm-hmm. Same people, same job, same manager, same expectations. How does one kind of thrive and then one doesn't really manage to even hold on? What's going on and what makes the difference?
And you know where I'd really love to start is I've been there, done that and got the t-shirt. You know, I've been that leader and I've been that employee. So I don't go in here with any kind of judgment at all. I've learned some hard lessons on both sides, but those lessons led me to deep curiosity. So I think that's where I begin as both a leader and employee. What's missing here? What can I do? What can I do differently? It's a perennial question. And no matter how experienced you are, you're still going to come across an employee situation that might stump you. Why they're not performing is going to stump you. And there's so many reasons. And I think where we can start with, it's both more complex and simpler than it appears.
I love that. And I love that curiosity about it. So we don't have the solution straight away, but we're curious to look at the gaps and look at what's going wrong. Where would you tend to look at first?
Yeah. And I think that's important because I think if people are listening to this, they're like, right, quick, what's the answer? There isn't a quick answer. What there is discovery. That's really the first step, is discovery. Now, of course, because I go in with fresh eyes, it's easier for me to discover, because what we do as humans is we get very, very stuck very quickly with an opinion. It's called confirmation bias. If you like the traitors, you see it in the traitors all the time. Once somebody's decided you're a traitor, that's it. There's not a lot you can do about it. And if we transfer that to the workplace, the same thing is happening. If we decide our boss is evil, there is little that can be done to change your mind, and vice versa. If a leader decides that a member of their team just isn't cutting it, it's very difficult to change their minds. So because I've got fresh eyes and fresh ears, I go in with that curiosity, because, you know, I've no agenda in this bun fight, as it were. So I go in and I start asking questions. Usually I'm talking to the leader first. And so I ask a lot of open, curious questions. We need to figure out a way to calm both sides' nervous systems down, because as soon as we're in kind of fight, flight or freeze, it's very difficult to talk about the real solution here. So it's about going in with a very calm, curious, and essentially really believing that there's a solution, you know? Mm-hmm. One of my qualifications is obviously coaching. And as coaches, we have a fundamental belief that people are whole and they've got all the potential they need. And when we go in with that mindset, so much more is possible and people feel seen and feel heard. And then we can really get into the real problem. What's really happening under the hood?
And there could be so many things going on. I love the whole idea of the traitors, because we literally can see that playing out. Yeah. But oftentimes, if you're a manager and you kind of hired somebody, maybe you're not willing to admit that there's been a role misalignment, or you gave somebody extra responsibilities that they really hadn't got the skills to do. Maybe their CV would have told you if you looked a bit deeper. But that can be a tricky one, because there can be a skill gap often with people, mm-hmm. and they just need a little bit of scaffolding to bring them on the journey.
Absolutely. And one thing I always hire for is attitude and potential. the skills I believe we can learn if people have the right mindset to learning, you know. So that for me is a huge factor. And the candidate journey is something that I've always been really fascinated by, and see that there's an awful lot of influence we can have in the overall health of that eventual employee in the organization if we get the candidate journey piece right. So if the job description is written properly, is the job really the job they're going to do when they come into the organization? So often it's not. You wouldn't believe how often you see that somebody's taken a job that isn't really the job they applied for, and then suddenly they're the problem, you know. Also, expectation management is really poor. I mean, that's one of my kind of key cornerstones, I think, when I look at a problem, is are the expectations super clear? And usually they're not. We kind of expect employees to be mind readers, and as employees, we expect our leaders to be mind readers, you know, and that's not the case. So expectation management is huge for me. I obviously did a lot of recruitment in my days in HR. One thing I'd say to leaders is, please come to the interview with the three biggest problems you would like this role to fix, you know, and tell the person that you're hiring what those three biggest problems are. And I remember at the start, I used to get a little bit of resistance. They were like, well, nobody will take a job if we tell them. And I'm like, no, the right person sees those problems as absolute, like, oh, you know, delicious. You know, if you give me the right problems you want to solve in your organization, I could either see them delicious or as something that I'm allergic to. I want to hire the person who finds it delicious, you know.
And I think that's so important. And you mentioned so many areas there just to touch on. But I do think it's from the top down sometimes. Yeah. If the management team don't really know what they need or what they want, or if they have kind of old fashioned ways of doing things, but on paper, they're writing that this is the way we want things. That misalignment can be very difficult for any candidate to really land the expectations correctly.
Mm-hmm. And often the leaders learn that the hard way, which is a shame, because it's the candidate, the employee, who's suffering because those leaders in that company are learning it the hard way. I've seen job descriptions that are 4 or 5 pages long, and I'm like, really? Which bit do you really want them to do? Like, which bit do you want them to prioritize? Because that's not clear looking at this job description, what you really want this person to do. So for me, it's a very complex question that you asked, you know, where do you start? And it really depends on the problem that that is being given to me. Sometimes it's simply, look, the way this person is showing up in meetings isn't working. So I work as a coach to understand how that person's showing up, why they're showing up that way, and what, you know, opportunities and options do they have. So, you know, that can be quite simple. But then when we dig into it, we find out that the system is causing real problems for this person. So therefore, they don't know how to show up. They don't know what's expected of them. And they go in confused. And as you know, when we're confused, it's very difficult to show up in our best space. So it's simple. It's often simpler than it seems to be. Often it's just a conversation. Andrea, do you know the amount of times I've said to leaders, did you have a chat to that person? And they go, no. And I'm like, well, maybe start with a chat. It happens so often. But then often it's much more complex. It's, you know, a very complex political environment where values are perhaps toxic, where expectations are unclear. So it can be everything from as simple as anything to very, very complex to deal with performance.
And I think that's why sometimes bringing in an outsider with the fresh eyes, with the curious mind, you can sort of find out the hidden struggles of each person and see why are they not really thriving, even though they're still delivering, but they're not reaching that potential point.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as well, as an outsider, it's strange, but you can create trust very, very quickly. And you can create a safe space where people really share with you what's really going on, which is funny because you think as an outsider, you'd be greeted with distrust. But usually people are in a position where they just need it. They need a hand. They need something. They need help. And they're kind of ready. And if you can create trust very, very quickly where they share with you quite. So just when I say discovery, it sounds like such a long process. Often it's not, depending on the problem. Often it's not at all a long process. If we're doing something like culture, yes, of course, that can take a while. We do workshops, we do individual meetings, we might do surveys, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, for a very simple performance issue between a leader and an employee, it can be quite quick, the discovery, to figure out where the problems really are, or where, honestly, sometimes though it's easier to focus on strengths, you know, where's the potential rather than where's the problem, where can we really focus our positive energy rather than spending all this time on the negative energy side of things, you know, where's our energy best used in this issue.
And have you seen kind of examples of where someone is clearly working really, really hard and they're very diligent and very focused, but they're just not missing the mark, like they're missing the mark for something? What can that be about? Because I know that kind of effort versus impact. I've seen it before. We've all seen it. And the person's a great person, but they're just something not kind of landing for them.
Yeah, I've seen it so many times and I've probably been there myself. You know, when I think like years and years ago, when I was trying to figure out who I was and how I show up in the workplace, I remember seeing this quote. Everybody's seen it now, but at the time it was really new. And it was, get out of your own way. And I remember looking at it and going, oh, I'm really in my own way. And just having this real awakening of, oh, my energy is in the wrong place. And yes, I've seen it many, many times. And the frustration that it causes the person is a really bad use of their energy as well, you know. So the addling over the problem can be part of the problem, because they're being so hard on themselves and they don't understand what's going wrong, and they're spending so much time in that kind of, you know, kind of sea of desperation, and that it's hard to see where they can add value. So for me, that's very much an energy situation. Where are you putting your energy? How are you prioritizing? As a leader, what does great look like? Asking your boss, what does great look like? What is the definition of done? If I got one thing done today, you know, I'll get loads more things done today. But if I got one thing done today, what is the most important thing to get done? It's kind of being able to ask those questions and then focus on the delivery of those things, rather than, which a lot of us do when we're panicking, is we're trying to be all things to all people.
I mean, you're talking so much sense here. And even if people had a few kind of pertinent questions that they could ask their leaders, or if leaders similarly had a couple of clarification points that they could say to their employees, this is what's important. But something you mentioned there, okay, about the leaders, and you mentioned the bias as well already, but behavioral styles, if a leader is often unaware that they're rewarding one behavior style over another, how does that play out in the workplace, or how have you seen that unfold?
I think it's a really interesting question, because I think if I put myself in the shoes of being the leader, it's very difficult not to reward a behavioral style that suits you, you know? So what I used to do, and again, I learned this the hard way. Most of my lessons I learned the hard way. Have you ever heard of a README document?
No, you have to explain a README document. I think I know what it is, but go on.
It's quite popular in the tech world. So a girl I used to work with, an agile coach, introduced this to me. And basically what it is, it's a document that you give to new starters. This is how to read me as a leader. So I started to write it because I love those kind of challenges. I was like, oh, this is interesting. So I started to write it. So it's things like what I value, what drives me crazy, how to communicate with me. For me as well, it was how I want my team to be seen. You know, these are the kind of standards I hold, because I believe in standards and these are my standards. But often we don't say these out loud. So I created this document with the idea of showing it to a new starter. Now, people can create them in whatever form suits them. I'm a very visual person, so I did it on PowerPoint. I've seen short ones on Excel. I've seen them on Word. So really, it has to be in the leader's style, because that is part of the communication. So I created one and I sent it to my existing team. And I said, is this me? Do you think this is a good description? They were like, yeah. Bang on. And I would change it regularly. You know, as I'd have a new starter on my team, I'd revisit my README document. And what I would do is on the first day somebody started, obviously, sorry, I say obviously, but this doesn't happen so often. Their first meeting should be with their leader. So their first meeting on their first day was with me. And I'd say, listen, just indulge me while I go through this README document, because I want you to understand exactly what it's like to work for me. Now, in doing it as well, it really started informing how I show up in interviews. So when I'm looking for an employee, it started really informing how I look for the right person for my team, because I'm evolving as a leader. I need you to evolve as a human. and let's do it together is kind of my approach when it comes to the README document. So I used to do that with them. And for me, it was such a quick win for trust. And when there's trust in the room, everybody's nervous system is more relaxed. You can have much better conversations. And what I found it helped me do is, you know, when I was irritated by something, by a behavior, or I needed something different, it was so much easier to go there because we'd had that first conversation on day one. So I found it was quite evolutionary, actually, in my leadership.
And I know I spoke to somebody recently who said that they do that across the company. It's an American company. Mm-hmm. And they have it almost like if you're going to send a person an email, you have this few salient points about how they respond. And often the senior management, when they're looking to put a new team together, they try to look at those documents. They had a different name to bring the team together. So if any HR person is listening in now and thinking, I absolutely love this idea, but I think I need somebody to facilitate it. Presumably somebody like yourself has come into companies to kind of help people, you know, write the README document and really have the right points written down.
Yeah. And if you look at cultural work, what you're saying there, like cultural work is like a couple of steps above the README document. It's basically saying as an organization, how do you read us? You know, because I find as well, culture and values, you get people rolling their eyes at this stuff, right? But it is so fundamental in how people show up and how they deliver in your workplace, because you're being really intentional about saying, this is what works around here. This is what's rewarded around here. So for me, again, it's a fundamental piece of work, and you use it at the recruitment. Well, sorry, I used it from the very start, from the attraction stage. If you like the sound of working like this, this company might suit you. You know, I used to say about my old company, because we had a huge challenge in one of our first years. We had to hire 100 people into a company that nobody had heard of, and we had no benefits. I used to joke and say we pay people in hugs and sausages because we had no benefits, right? So I kind of created a problem statement at the time, and the problem statement or the solution was, how do I get the candidate to fall in love with us the second they see us? And everything we did was based around that. So our whole candidate journey was based around that. And would you believe, with no benefits, I think out of 100 people, we did hire the 100 people, I think about 5 people turned us down, because everybody fell in love with our stories and our values because they were so authentic. So this work, this README stuff, works at a leader level, at an employee level, because if you ask an employee to write a README document, most people don't know where to start because they don't know what they really want. And if you don't know what you really want, and this is my message to employees and to leaders, if you don't know what you want, how the hell can you ask somebody else to give it to you? You know, how can you translate that?
So many points here, but then I'm wondering, what if you have somebody who kind of genuinely believes that they are part of the culture and they, you know, embody the values, but they're off? And then how do you kind of bring them on board, or maybe decide, you know, this is not working for our company? I mean, they're the tough questions, you know.
Yeah. And honestly, that's one of my questions. So I go into companies, and a lot of them have had very long problems with the same person. And usually, again, I say, well, have you told them? And the answer is always no, always. And these people could be there for 20 years. And it's like, well, no, not really. Okay, so they don't actually know that they're not a fit. Okay. So basically, we work on self-awareness on both sides. And depending on the appetite of the company, depends on how gentle that is. Because I always check with a company, what's your appetite? Some companies, they're like, yeah, let's go, let's get rid, or let's deal with it, let's go. Once they become aware that it's something that needs working on. Some companies are gentler, and that's okay. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, just in or out, you know, but I like to find out, are we managing in or are we managing out? Because
and
that's
you're supporting
really important.
The person, and, you know, because they're obviously struggling as well. So there's kind of a lack of clarity on both sides, and you're making sure that the best outcome for all parties is, you know, achieved.
You know what? I have worked in a couple of companies where I was so lucky. Again, the values alignment was really good, where I could say to the CEOs, okay, got it. This person needs to go. Got it. But can we do it the right way? And the answer was always yes. Mm-hmm. And as a HR person, any HR people listening will know that's a beautiful place to be.
Absolutely. And then I'm thinking, Steph, as you're talking, there's probably the other problem of those people who overextend themselves in companies. Mm. So you have those people who maybe aren't showing up right, but then the other people are showing up so well, but you worry about burnout or their own work-life balance, because you want harmony for all of your team so that they can be happy and keep coming up, and you want that long relationship.
Absolutely. And again, it's an energy question, isn't it? And it's for me as well, when people are over showing up, and I've been there as well, often it's an internal driver that's making that happen. And we've got to look at that, is there a perfectionist streak? Is there people, I'm the ultimate people pleaser. I've had to work on that for years. You know, I want to be ice cream for everybody. I want to be pizza for everybody. And that's not great for your team. There's a wonderful book that I'm sure many of your listeners have read, but I know my clients love this book. And it's, the Liz Wiseman book, Multipliers? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. So if you want to look at how your internal stuff can show up in an unintentional negative way for your team. So for example, for me as a people pleaser, it's not great for my teams when I'm running around trying to please the whole company, It's not great for them. And the intention is so good. And this is the thing with overextenders. The intention is always solid. So we've got to be very careful how we treat overextenders, because they can take the critique that, their energy is frantic, or, they're going to burn out. Those warnings they can take as critiques, and that's not intentional either. So I think we've really got to look at the intention. Look, my belief is nobody turns up for work intending to do a bad day. Nobody.
And I think that's a really good point. If you have that lens and you haven't got that bias, as we mentioned earlier, that's so important. How do you figure out then if it's a person or a system problem? So, is it our systems that we have in place that are just failing the employees, or is this an employee problem? Like, there's kind of a different look at that, I feel.
Honestly, it's usually both. So if I look at, obviously I help people now as an external, but when I was an internal, when we had an employee who was genuinely not performing and suffering, it was both. It was both how we set them up, the expectation management, whether they were a fit in the first place. Every time I went against my gut, and I say let, but you know yourself, as a HR person, you have a lot of say in whether a person's hired or not, and allowed the manager to go against my gut, nearly every time I was right, because fit is one of the most important things. We can get all sorts done. We can achieve so much if the fit is right, because we feel right in the company, So our nervous system is in a good place when we go into work every day. So when I look at a poor performing employee, and there's one popping into my head right now, the big ones, the big memorable ones. Genuinely, there was a system problem layered on top of that, which made it an absolute, the worst storm, perfect storm.
And what did that kind of teach you about leadership then, when you kind of observed that?
Well, firstly, like I say, fit is everything. So being very clear on the culture and values of the company, and it's okay if a person doesn't think they're going to love it. That's okay. To be really warts and all in interviews, we got very good at that. You'll either love it, but you might hate it. And that's okay. There will be a company out there for you, and there's an employee out there for us. So that's number one. Number two, I joined HR quite late in life. So I always felt like I was kind of catching up a little bit, right? So if a manager came to me with a problem, I would often just jump in and assume the manager was telling me the exact truth. And they were telling me their truth, but it really paid me. I got more and more curious and took a beat as time went on. I wouldn't jump in and start solving, because often when I jumped in and started solving, I then found out, and I then realized, probably too late, that there was a lot of, leadership issues there, system issues there that actually needed addressing. It wasn't all the employee's fault. So I really learned over the years to just chill a bit, take a minute, listen to everybody, and just take a beat. And often overnight, there's nothing wrong. And I think, I learned that, particularly around, the disciplinaries, the tough ones, the ones where it's like, will the person keep their job or not? Again, I worked in a company where they were okay with us taking a beat, saying, can I just sleep on that? Because it's a big decision. This is a big decision. Taking somebody's employment away from them is the biggest of decisions. So let's sleep on it. Let's see what we wake up with in the morning. And often you'd be feeling a little different in the morning because you allowed your brain to just percolate it and sit with it overnight. So I think they're two big ones, being so clear on who you are as a company, and not everybody's going to love that. And that's okay. You know, don't hire them. Let them not love it. Let them move on. Let them interview you as well as you interviewing them.
And I think it's that kind of relational piece about listening more than talking and really hearing and seeing, you know, what's in front of you with the employee. I have to say, I could keep going, but we might have to get you back on again to kind of zone in on some of these areas. What I'm taking away is that README document. Is there any one thing that you would like listeners to take away, or indeed, if they're like me wanting to know more, how can they get in contact with you?
Hey, well, yes, I love talking about this stuff, as you can tell. So happy to chat to anybody about it. I would say if you're a leader listening to this, have a look at Liz Wiseman's accidental diminishers. So, you know, we see this as a spectrum where either multipliers or diminishers. No, most of us as leaders accidentally diminish. And that was one of the biggest aha moments for me when I read that list. I went, oh, I do quite a bit of that. And I didn't mean to, because the intention's good. So I think that could be quite an aha moment for any leaders listening to this. And if they'd like to talk more to me, my website is currently under construction. It's an old website. So emailing me or LinkedIn is best. And you'll find me at Steph, STEPHBE .ie is my email, or and same on LinkedIn, Stephanie Brady on LinkedIn.
I love it. Steph B, Global Collective. Lots of wisdom there, but no doubt we'll be chatting to you again. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to HR HQ today.
Thanks for having me.
HRHQ.ie.